It's a great pleasure to introduce each and every one of these gentlemen. I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about your company, what you do, and we'll start with you, Matthew.
So, Matthew Gilliatt Smith, I'm CEO of Fortium. Fortium does content protection solutions, particularly in the pre-release area, in sort of post-production. So, trying to lock down the content while it's being worked on before it goes to cinema. We've been around for a long time, about 16 years. The last 10, we've worked with the Hollywood studios. We still do Academy Awards screeners on DVD, believe it or not. They still get pumped out. In fact, this year we did 70 titles, more than we've ever done before, so it seems like DVDs aren't going away anytime soon. But the real nub of all this is file workflows, and that's what we specialize in doing.
Fantastic. Ramon?
Yeah, my name is Ramon Bertan. I'm the CTO over at Third Eye QC. So we're a quality control company. We've been doing that for about 25 years. We do third-party quality control. So when a facility creates a file or creates a tape or creates a Blu-ray, they'll do their own QC, but then the content owner will hire us to come in and do an additional QC just to kind of do that outside check, that outside proofreading. And about 5 years ago, we started moving some of our file operations to our facility once that became feasible. So security is a big issue for us. It's an issue for our DVD and Blu-ray side as well. But with DVD and Blu-rays, at least it's been in the theaters already. But when we're working with some of our OTT clients and we get pre-release files, those have not been seen by anybody, and that's very high-value content. So security is a big issue for us.
And Joshua?
All right, yes, Joshua Berger here. So I'm the SVP of Media Management for AMC Networks, and so I oversee, you know, originally oversaw the operations group, which is primarily tasked with, you know, working with all the content producers, either within our own studio or content producers that we work, collaborate with, you know, Sony and so on and so forth, bringing all that media into our organization and distributing it out to our viewers. And what we realized is that we had different groups separated out, and ultimately IP protection was a silo. And so we realized as a company that we needed to integrate IP protection with the process, actually, of moving and distributing our programming. And we need to do that quite rapidly, which really was triggered by the success of The Walking Dead about 7 years ago, where we, you know, had the fortunate success of having a show that everybody really wanted pre-release, but it caused, you know, for us as an organization, an enormous drive to have to reinvent the way we do business from a protection perspective.
And I think pre-release is really kind of a sweet spot here, right? Because ultimately it does transcend, each and every one of your companies in terms of where you're working, what you're doing. It's interesting because this is a risk management strategy, right? And it's protected at all costs. We can either start by beginning in terms of a use case and what's been going on with you at AMC. But I also maybe we should sow some seeds from a policy and workflow perspective. Because ultimately, a pre-release leak is a disaster, there's no doubt. But we can mitigate some of that disaster by having proper procedures and policies in place. So, Ramon, I'm going to start with you. And what have you found are some of the challenges in terms of implementing policies and procedures? Look, we're very nascent in media and entertainment, right? We had a kind of a closed ecosystem, and it was used to be locked by analog, right, which was great. Physical theft. Obviously, with IP-based delivery, and it's a huge topic here, it's much more challenging. So some of these things are new, and obviously we're trying to give people advice about how they should internally build. So what are some of the challenges that you've had in terms of implementing some policies and procedures about your workflow?
Yeah, that's a good question. So for us, you know, we're dealing with, like, so we, you know, we go to these conferences. We're immersed in security. We think about this all the time. But when it comes to our daily operators who come in and look at the content, you know, they're not necessarily thinking about it that way. So the first step is educating them how important it is that, okay, we're going to ask you to do things that are a little bit different. It's maybe not intuitive to have to change your complex password every so often, things like that. But it's not that hard to educate people when they understand the world we live in. I mean, they hear about these data breaches that occur outside of our industry and within our industry. So they understand, okay, there's a little bit more steps that I'm going to have to take in order to just do my job at work. And I think the second biggest part of that education is understanding that it's not just about any sort of like data breach or a leak of a file at our facility. It's also about protecting the content in terms of spoilers. So it's not just don't share it at home with your wife or your coworkers or a friend who might tell someone else, but don't share it on social media. Don't do that. Because these days, I'm sure you guys do it too. There's most content owners will scrape social media just looking for any clues of any sort of leak. I mean, that's probably the first place some leaks are detected.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a whole industry that's based on trying to figure out where each different, you know, star is geographically at any given moment in time to try to predict, you know, who's going to die next week, you know, in The Walking Dead. So, yeah, it is a challenge, and I think it does start at the script level. There are physical protection methods that are required on set. Definitely, you know, the onset of new technology has posed challenges in terms of drones, you know, taking footage. We've seen articles come out about that, scenes from, you know, Game of Thrones, various different shows coming out. So it's a very broad threat vector, I guess, in terms of keeping the plot secret and not spoiling the show for the fans. And I think you touched, you know, on one of the key components that is critical to success, which is the education and the, you know, the individual ownership of solving and protecting the content itself. You know, it's a cultural thing. You know, we're only going to be as strong or as weak as the weakest, you know, or the least educated person in
or
our
least
distribution.
Paid.
Least paid.
You know.
You know. So you have there's staff education. There's a cultural awareness and you know, initiative that's required, and also making sure that the vendors that you're working with are very carefully you know, selected. You know, that you're working with companies that, you know, share your philosophy around, you know, protecting the crown jewels.
I mean, do you see this also as something, because this is the standard debate, because you do need to reach down into the furthest, right? The, you know, the line prep cook in the catering truck, right? Now, but do you see this as a top-down where, you know, you get buy-in from the senior level management and you get budget and then, you know, and then... Or do you see it more as this needs, you know, it's almost like create a feature, right? Do we really build it and burble it from the bottom?
Well, I mean, I think it's, you have to hit it at every level. It's ultimately very challenging if you don't have buy-in from the top, because there are certain investments and certain policy decisions that, you know, need to be implemented within your organization to make sure that everybody really is on the same, you know, on the same field, on the same page. But I think the message isn't necessarily going to come from the top down. I think the message is much better distributed amongst, you know, peer sets, so that everyone feels, you know, part of the solution versus, you know, oh, you know, my boss told me I can't use the USB drives anymore, and yeah, it's such a pain in the ass.
Well, I'm sure also you have a pretty broad swath in terms of your screening stuff, right? Of who's doing what and who's watching. And I'm sure you have a little inkling of who's sharing passwords and whatnot, right?
Exactly,
a little bit.
Exactly. I mean, the interesting thing, the stat I found fascinating was PwC did the audit last year, and 16% of the worst, most expensive leaks were accidental, which is, you know, a pretty bad situation. And that's the issue, is that a lot of people aren't intentionally leaking the content. It's like, as you say, oops, I've instead of putting Guy Finley on my email for the link, I put Guy Fred, and that's what happens. And someone clicks on the link, they get the file, and game over. And that's the problem. And so education is a big thing, but also just putting tools in there that just prevent people from doing this. I mean, people don't want to be bothered with doing anything extra in the work. And this morning I was hosting a panel debate on can security be frictionless in the workflow, and you know. The answer is it's quite hard to do that, but you have to do something. You know, do you have two-factor authentication like we do with our banks, or do you just make it sort of more simple? But the point is, it's a big problem. this weekend at the Avid Connect two-day conference, there was 1,200 of the most senior post-production guys attending, you know, all the guys doing news and features and TV and what have you. And in every single one of the panels, security was the biggest topic. I mean, probably because they're talking about, you know, they've done this big announcement with Microsoft to go into the cloud and have Microsoft being the cloud provider. So, you know, it's I think security is something that is getting kind of bigger and bigger and bigger because we can see all the cybersecurity threats all the time, every day in a corporate environment. And in our world, it's something that has really got to be tackled, but it's not as straightforward as you might think.
But how do you demonstrate ROI on education? I mean, it's tough, right? This is not an easy thing, right? Because this will cost money, time, labor, however you do it, right? If whatever you throw at it, there is going to be a cost, right? I mean, so how is this quantifiable? Is the ROI in less sleepless nights? Is it, you know, because this isn't something where we can say, you know, I don't think anybody's going to venture to say, oh, we've been 265 days without a breach, right? Like the old workforce safety thing. So I'm just thinking, from an FYI on the ROI side, how are we going to quantify some of this, or do we just do it because we have to?
Well, I mean, on the programmer side, we definitely feel the expense of those breaches, you know, and certainly there are technology solutions that help you know, mitigate the cost of investigating and trying to understand where those breaches occurred. Certainly from a workflow. And workflow management has become critical to a successful strategy because if you have too many different disparate workflows and you don't have enough control of your supply chain, when you do have a leak and you're investigating, the cost can be, you know, pretty significant, and ultimately you may never find out the cause of that leak. So, you know, watermarking, chain of custody, those are critical components. Need to know, you know, you know, instilling a requirement that, you know, not everybody's going to get this script, right? And all the people that are going to get it, you know, maybe only two people are going to be able to download that script or print it. You know, relying on technology to limit the number of people that are actually able to, you know, come in contact with the content in advance is critical. And I think there are contractual requirements, you know, to provide certain levels of security. And I do think that actually, you know, and this came up a little bit in the panel I was on yesterday here, which is I actually think that, you know, and I think, Matthew, you sort of touched on it, the separation of this, like, concept that, you know, content protection, IP protection is somehow different from cybersecurity protection methods needs to be dispelled within organizations. You know, if companies, you know, I think EY is, you know, is benchmarking at, you know, about 30% of IT spend within companies should be on cybersecurity. You know, I think you kind of got to put a factor in there and bundle that effort together on the IP protection side, because it's the same guys that are coming after you. They're going to take your programming, they're going to take your money, they're going to prevent your people from going to work in the morning. They're going to threaten your staff, you know, and you have to treat it as a single, you know, as a single threat. I think I don't think we can treat it as a separate, you know, issue for us
right,
anymore,
or a separate business unit, right?
You know, yeah,
it's security is security is security, right? Cyber pre-release, etc.
Yeah,
I mean, we talked about workflows a little bit, so you know, obviously changes to workflows are a big deal, especially here at NAB. What have you been doing over at Fortium in terms of modifying workflows and addressing some of the security concerns of your customers?
Well, the product that we've that's been used quite widely now is like a file encryption at rest solution. And so you're working post-production, you provide access control to the people who are have the rights to view the content, and they work on it and do this sort of stuff. And you know, it's strong, it works well, but you are having to encourage people to do something extra. So we have been working to try and simplify that model, and actually we're showing it to NAB, kind of a new version. It's called Live Folders. And what it allows people to do is just to right-click on a folder, and it becomes encrypted, and anything you drag into that folder, and anything you make within that folder, is automatically encrypted. So this just makes life a lot easier for all those editors and creatives who are you know, in the workflow and they're trying to do their daily business. We're just making it, you know, just a right click. That's all it is, as opposed to you know, a sort of a big setup. And people are pretty unforgiving, you know, if the producer comes in or the main creative comes in onto the soundstage and he's got that session in it, and if something takes, you know, more than 30 seconds to load up, he's saying, okay, look, I'll come back tomorrow, and the production company says, okay, $40,000 wasted, and that's the issue. And so some of the big guys are very, very unforgiving. You know, they do not want to have anything gets in the way. But on the other hand, you know, when something goes wrong, it's a big deal. I mean, you don't often hear necessarily about big, full leaks, but what you do hear about is from all the folk who kind of do what we do, the time, effort, money they go to bring down all that content that's got up there.
Yeah, I mean that is a tug of war, right? The content, you know, the creator, you know, doesn't want any friction, no friction. But the moment that there's a leak, you know, they immediately want everything taken down. You know, how could this possibly happen? You know.
Well, and often say, look, the problem isn't with me. I absolutely appreciate security, but look, I'm fine. I'm safe. I don't need to do anything different. You know?
Yeah.
But of course, they do.
Yeah. No, it definitely needs to be top of mind for everybody in the creative process, and all along the supply chain.
But I do think it has to come from the top. I mean, we find when we're putting our products out, you get the buy-in. It all makes sense. Security, of course, we'll do it. But, you know, budgets have to be signed off, and right. It's only when the guy at the top says, we're going to do this. There's one company we all work with, and when you get an email from them, it says, warning, this is an external email.
Yes.
And you know why that's on there, because they must have written something terrible about a customer one day. And now the guy at the top says, this is what we're going to do, period.
Yeah. I think that also helps, you know, differentiate phishing. You know, or, you know, identity masking, sometimes something looks like it comes from a colleague and it's actually, you know, their name, but an external URL, and you open it, you think it's from them, and you click a link, and that's when the trouble starts.
Well, like, again, right, there's where a policy is implemented, right, because something happened.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, that's developing your... unfortunately, it usually is because of an incident, right? But the reality is the reason why all these policies were written is because of incidents, right? We can sit there and think until we're blue in the face of scenarios, but it's... next thing you know, it's like we thought of everything, but they went in this way.
Yeah.
And then you react to it, you say, all right, plug the hole, build a policy.
That's the moment when you have the spotlight is on the process. And if, you know, I feel like our group has failed if we don't take advantage of that spotlight. That's the moment where we go in and say, look,
everybody has, you know,
we have an issue, we're going to solve it, but we need to prevent it from happening again. And then, you know, the purse strings loosen a little bit, and you get some buy-in from the top.
Interesting. You know, what do you deal with? We talked about spoiling, Ramon. You know, ultimately, as our industry moves forward, right, we've gone away from, you know, it used to be Burbank was the central hub of everything, right? Everything happened. My old line was, Hollywood gets the credit, Burbank gets the job done, right? But now we're diffuse. We're, you know, whether it's work at home, work in another area, work in another state, let alone the whole localization issue, and when you talk about global, what are some of the things that you've come across in terms of your own workforce, you know, look, this is small or large, doesn't matter, in terms of bringing people on and educating about some of this stuff. You know, one of the things we were talking about is you know, how to implement some of these things. You know, is it like, congratulations, you're hired, and then thud a gigantic manual and says, you figure it out, right? Call me when you're done, and then you'll go to the next phase. You know, how do you guys approach bringing people on and dealing with some of those, I'm working on a bit of it, including spoilage?
Yeah, so it's a bit of a two-step process. So for us, I mean, calculating the ROI for security for us is very easy, because we work with people, like, let's say, you know, AMC. If we worked with AMC, it would be a matter of, they might have their specific security audit we would have to go through. So most of our content partners on the OTT and the premium cable side, they have very specific audits that we have to go through. So we know that we're doing exactly what they want. So the decisions that you make, we're implementing. So that's kind of step one. But step two is it's up to like me and other people at my level at the company to make sure that the actual operators are doing those procedures. And so that's when it is just one-on-one with them in the room explaining, okay, these devices will never see the internet because they have content on them. And, you know, you plug in your laptop over here in this cable, you know, in this port, you know, that kind of thing. Just, you know, it's just one-on-one. It just takes time is all it is.
And
but
walk them through the process, hold their hand.
Yeah, exactly. And just walk them through, hold their hand, and just make sure that they understand. And I think you put it really well when you talked about making them invested in the process and making them understand that, you know, it's a big deal to work on a show that hasn't been released yet that some people would really like to know about. But it's a big responsibility, and it's cool to just say, hey, you know, you're a part of keeping this a secret by not talking about it. Yeah. And that's a good thing just to motivate them that way.
I mean, Matthew, I'm sure you're training executives all the time, or you have a team training executives. I mean, you know, like, I you know, don't give anything away, right, obviously, and we don't need to tell a funny story to change some, you know, knucklehead high-level executive. But is it what comes into this process around some of your products where it's like, now you essentially have to train insert Academy Award-winning director's name here. How have you been dealing with some of that?
Well,
you dumb it down? Do you dumb it down for them?
Yeah, we do. Dumb it down. We go in, we do the pitch, the guy says, look, we need to have a solution. In fact, three times today, exactly the same conversation. So they go, we want to put it in. We've got a lot of execs who are busy, they don't want to listen. How do we do this? So we kind of do it at different levels. And we do the big level, the big picture, this is what we're trying to do. And then, you know, for you personally, this will be the sort of the set of procedures you've got to take. And then the sort of the IT people, then we kind of go really far down. What we do is we go on premises and we set them up, we try and get the whole thing done for them, and therefore there's no kind of backing up, because when you give someone something to do, unless it's top of priority, it'll be still be waiting to be done for 6 months later. So that's why we go in and try and force the pace. And I mean, training, it's not so hard on the training in terms of what you're trying to achieve, but it's just the kind of the use cases. And every company has a different use case. You know, what works for Disney doesn't work for Universal, and, you know, something else that works for Sony doesn't work for AMC, perhaps, you know. So everybody has a customized thing, and you've got to be very, you've got to be very kind of broad in your view. And when we talk about return on investment, it's not just for the content owners, it's also the vendors who are providing the solutions. Because when someone says, oh, I like it with pink spots and I want it to go faster, you know, that's a lot of work we have to do in order to, you know, sell the product and make something new. But at the end of the day, it is an investment for everybody. And we know that there is, it's a growing demand for it. And that's what we have to sort of focus on.
And Joshua, we've got about 10 minutes left. And I definitely didn't want to. I wanted to talk about this, right? The Walking Dead, obviously huge. Fear of the Walking Dead sequel, right? You did a global day-in date.
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
So you know, for us, you know, that posed a big challenge for us. You know, we learned a lot about content protection with the successful, you know, piracy efforts on the Walking Dead. You know, from it being basically been, you know, number two on, you know, peer-to-peer Billboard charts for several years, and you know, and we're a basic cable show, so. You know, number one, I think, has been Game of Thrones for a while. I'm not sure who it is now, but, you know, ultimately that's a pure pay subscription service. So,
High demand.
So, you know, I think ultimately what, you know, when that was announced, we were very concerned. We were taking responsibility for global distribution, whereas with The Walking Dead, we were partnering with Fox International. And so Fox, you know, took on the responsibility of securing, you know, The Walking Dead for us globally, and this was a new challenge. So fortunately, we had a mandate from our COO, who made it very clear that, you know, there were apt to be absolutely no leaks of this show prior to premiere, and it forced us to really engage our global team. We brought them together. We did several sessions, you know, training, helping them understand some of the, you know, some of the challenges that we'd face domestically, and helping, really engaging them to interpret that for their specific, you know, market, but also for their specific discipline. You know, and they came up with some creative solutions, you know, language dubbing houses, you know, consolidation of vendors. You know, we brought in some new technology with, actually with, you know, the MediaSeal product to, you know, to bring in this concept of encryption at rest, which, you know, operationally helps us get the product into the field and be in a secure way, right? So we can control the release of that media. So we're not sitting there, you know, previously worried that, you know, if we don't give everybody at least, you know, 3 to 4 days or even a week to work on this title, you know, they're not going to make their business deadlines and their air dates. So it allowed us to get the programming pretty quickly out into the field, and ultimately gave us some visibility into who was, from the DRM perspective, who was downloading it. We were limiting the people that were going to get those keys. It actually, you know, helped speed up the process for us in a significant way.
So, do you still feel like you're getting return on that investment? Because I assume a lot of that stuff.
We had no leaks.
Right, you had no leaks, right?
It was. And I was the first one to say this is not going to work from a strategy perspective, and, you know, galvanizing everybody around this, you know, this mission. A lot of times, you know, you do everything and somebody creates a promo that has a, you know, spoiler in it, and it only goes out in one territory. You know, that immediately goes global, right? So, you know,
that's the challenge.
I thought that was, we were at least going to get one of those. We've had several of those on The Walking Dead. But I think it goes back to that, you know, common mission, support from a mandate from, you know, from the top.
And also you have to have a product that somebody really, really wants.
True.
Right? Because, you know, I can think of a couple shows and be like, yeah, man, all right.
Yeah.
Right? But ultimately, you know, by the way, you think about somebody like Disney or, you know, something like Warner protecting big franchises. The Walking Dead is one of your big franchises,
yeah.
Right? That's
yeah.
the other thing is when you're playing in that upper tier, big risk, right? Big financial risk,
yep.
Big fan base, and a lot's riding on it. It tends to drive that. So that's why I was curious also if the ROI continued. You probably changed some serious backbone workflow and processes.
I think we... You know, so we upped our game sort of across the board, and then we were very specific and choosy about, you know, what are the shows that are going to get the Fort Knox treatment, you know, because you, from an ROI perspective, that there is a cost associated with, you know, with using the luxury model, and we're not, this is actually an Al Perry line, right? We're not in the content protection business. We're in the program business.
Yes,
right? We produce shows. So,
Al,
you know,
he's right, though. He's right.
He's absolutely right.
Well, I would also say the tiered approach. We talked a little bit about audits and stuff like that, right? I mean, there are tier zero properties, definitely. But there's also a lot of tier threes,
mm-hmm.
right? Tier four, even,
mm-hmm.
right? Where you're like, essentially it's going to be free or advertising supported models, right? You know, I think having that moldability and malleability in terms of your process is a critical piece of it. And when you go to build something like this, these are the concerns and the questions that you have to address,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
you know, how important is this?
The protocols, I don't think we compromise on the protocol and the procedure. We just may not be able to afford to deploy a certain solution to every single show. And ultimately, our desire would be that, you know, we would be able to provide the same level of security to every show, to be honest. That would be our desire.
Yeah, and that's very much how it is for us. Like, once we went through what's known as one of the toughest audits in the industry, and once we went through that, all our content goes through the same procedure now at that point. So all our content is as secure as any A-level title, AAA title. And it's also helped us, too, with the ROI to say, okay, we had to spend some money to get our content that secure, to get our whole workflow that secure. But now when other studios and other clients approach us and they talk about our security, we say, well, we've been through this audit, that's all they need to hear. Like they don't have they maybe they're too small to have their own specific, you know, requirements in place. But once they understand that we are protecting this other kind of content, that's good enough for them. So that ROI is not just about keeping that one client, but it's getting new clients as well.
And part of the trick is to it's all about budgets. And you know, independent you know, tier threes, for example, are all, you know, they've got their very, very tight budget. But you know, sometimes the protection mechanisms aren't that expensive, but it's because it's not in the budget. It's like they just can't justify putting it in. And so the earlier that you can plan these things and put them in against a particular title, the easier it is. Because, you know, they spend more on catering, you know, than they do on a lot of these other things.
That's the irony, right? That really is the irony. I know. And it, by the way, you get to corporate and it's like their toilet paper budget. Sorry, that's terrible. But ultimately that is, it's about choices. I think that ultimately is what you're boiling it down to.
That's right.
It's about choices. And also from a service provider perspective, you have to have integrity around your product. I think one thing that is moving as we move forward in this industry is transparency. And it's like, just because you have the hottest, you know, yellow banana doesn't mean that you're going to be able to charge whatever the heck you want for it. Everybody does due diligence and everybody has competitors in this space, just about every piece of IP. But it is those relationships that get built where you feel like, ah, this is my partner. This is my trusted partner in this relationship.
Yeah.
And they will go through an audit,
right.
Whether it's a software audit or cloud audit, a physical security audit, whatever audit it needs to be, because they want to work with us and I want to work with them. I mean, those are the things also where... Oh, go ahead.
I think the audit in itself, you know, we could spend a half an hour on that, which we won't.
Absolutely.
But, you know...
More than that. 2 days.
You know, I do think that, you know, the challenge is that, you know, when we talk about the long form programming, and yesterday we talked also a little bit about the challenges relates to sort of the behind the scenes, the short form pieces that are now increasingly, you know, part of the distribution deals, part of the package that's being provided, but they're often being produced by departments that are funded at a much lower level, and you know, and they want to work with vendors that are, you know, that they know, that they're nimble. Sometimes it's, you know, just a, you know, a woman or a guy working out of their garage, you know, and they want us to do deals, you know, they want to do deals with these creators, and they're probably very creative and very good, and the audit process is very onerous for a small, you know, a small shop.
Sure.
So, you know, I think you know, we would probably be better served by somehow, you know, making that audit process a little easier to complete. I'm not saying we're going to be less stringent about the criteria that we're requiring for protecting our shows, but I just think the process, you know, and the sharing of that status and the certification. You know, we hear a lot about, you know, we've been, you know, reviewed by the NPAA, and you know, these small shops, that's never going to happen, right?
Well, by the way, you're teeing this up for me to do a whole long monologue about what the hell we're doing at CDSA, and I'll give it to you. But first, because we only have a few questions left, a few minutes left, are there any questions on the audience? Somebody can raise your hand. Scott will run around with the wireless microphone and get it in front of you. So honestly, this is exactly what we're doing. I would say we're 7 years into the process, but that means it seems like it's taken too long. But we're really about 18 months into the process in earnest. To build this trusted partner network and to have a scalable audit system where you're not, you're not hammering in a tiny little nail with a gigantic 10 pounds to 18
exactly.
pound sledge,
yeah.
right? And also to be moldable and flexible enough with a reporting mechanism back into a central tool where it touches right. on the whole idea of, oh, hey, well, I was audited by them a month ago. Why do you need audit me? Because they're way better than you are in terms of auditing. It should clear up some of these issues that have been going on for a long time, but really what it's been, the reason why I say 7 years, is because it's a tremendous industry effort to get everybody on the same page,
right.
not beat on their chests,
right.
and understand we're rising the tide and floating all these boats for a particular reason. And obviously the change to IP-based delivery is ultimately the reason. We're in the middle of the biggest transformation this business has seen since the invention of audio tape, right? Magnetic tape, I should just say magnetic tape, right?
Yeah.
But the reality is we have to be prepared for that future by hanging together now. I'll use the old Ben Franklin, hang together, hang separately. Everybody knows that quote. Raised hands, we had a question. Question in the front row.
Yeah, I was curious as to around the ROI and what's driving things. Is insurance playing anything as far as best practices, or you do XYZ and you get lower cybersecurity or insurance?
Good question. Good question.
Well, that's very interesting, actually, because we have been looking at that as an initiative with CDSA, in fact. You put in more fire alarms or burglar alarms in your house, and your insurance premium is this, and if you don't, it's that, and the same with your car, and you lock your car. So with the studios, it's been very hard to find, actually, talking to the studios about what their insurance does and does not cover, because in theory, if you're putting in lots and lots of security measures, then the claim against a loss should be, A should be covered, and B, the premium should be low if you're putting in the right procedures. But it's actually really very hard to find that information out. I think there's a cyber security or sort of like a virus sort of type cover. Yeah. But loss of content. I mean, Josh would probably know more than I would about it. But it's an interesting concept, because if you're putting in procedures, you're going to reduce your risk, and therefore you should get a better premium.
Yeah, I mean, I think to your point about cybersecurity, most of the time that security is covering your cleanup costs, right? Often with an IP incident, the challenge is really just being able to quantify the loss. That's the primary challenge. So we don't I don't see a lot of IP protection insurance. Cyber security insurance certainly exists. We have it. We hope you never have to use it, but ultimately the challenge is just that, when the loss is incurred by one of our partners, we have conversations about how do we get recuperation for that loss. And you start going, well, okay, the premier rating was X, how much would it have been if people hadn't have seen the show before? And then you get into the discussion of, well, if it was a really crappy show, then it hurts you even more, because you put all this marketing behind a show that was a real stinker, and everyone knew it was a stinker before you even premiered it. If it's a great show, you could argue, well, people saw it, it generated some buzz, it might have potentially driven up your tuning rating. Honestly, it's almost impossible to quantify.
Well, like Expendables 3, right? They said, oh, it was $120 million. There's no way in the movie would have made $120,000. Look, I love Avi Lerner, but come on. He's making that figure up. I think also when you get into economies of scale around a business, right? Like, fire insurance, I'm bringing up Ben Franklin again. That's very weird. Fire insurance was probably very expensive. Actually, Ben Franklin invented it. That was a joke. But the reality is, as a group, if we start working more together, then you start being able to quantify some of those things. And it may not be just around box office or ad revenue or sales. There could be other metrics we can bring into the fold.
I mean, if we're seeing 10 million, Kodi boxes preloaded being shipped annually, and you correlate and see the, erosion of, paid subscription, that's a big number too, right?
So, Totally. Oh, Kodi. So angry at those guys. Another question, back row.
Yes, hello. Hey, I'm a big Walking Dead fan, and I wanted to know what it took to kind of protect the lead up to season 7, the premiere of season 7, and between those months, what it took to really protect those the big reveal, and what AMC did in order to kind of make sure that wasn't spoiled for the audience.
Well, I can tell you that obviously it was a huge concern for us, especially because there was a gap. And that was a huge cliffhanger, and everybody knew there was going to be a big reveal. Well, that wasn't a secret. It was the who shot JR, for the older folks in the audience, who shot JR moment. And ultimately, what it did is it forced us to go above and beyond, what the measures that we have for any episode. I think. I can't really talk about everything that we did in specifics, but we were prepared for a strategy around what if the reveal did get out. Let's just plan for the plan for the worst and hope for the best, right? And I think that was slightly different for that episode because there was so much writing on it. So we, you know, we had some contingencies in place, and you know, when somebody leaks something, you know, there's some, often an assumption that that person has real information, right? So we saw that as an opportunity for us to, you know, perhaps have some plans in place to, you know, perhaps make it less clear what the result was going to be.
you just did the one line description for our panel, right? Prepare for the worst.
Yes, exactly. Hope for the best.
And hope for the best. Any other questions out here before we end up breaking? Any last minute points you gentlemen want to throw in? I think, you know, when you talk about ROI, right, and it's always rough talking about money because you never know what you're talking about. Are we talking about apples and oranges? Is there a tidbit to take away? Would you offer one piece of advice for companies that are really kind of looking at this? Could be a fresh new content creator, could be a YouTube star looking to protect his own IP, could be a small company. Is there a place where you started, or is there something that you would say embrace X, Y, or Z? Little sage bit of advice to close with, Matthew?
I would say that the problem is going to happen at some stage to any business, and therefore the more creative, the more proactive the company can be about trying to safeguard against loss, the better it's going to be for them. Some companies are very closed, others are much more proactive, but you know, we can tell from kind of recent history those that have suffered by being compromised in a bad way. I would say, yeah, be open. Not one solution fits all by any stretch of the imagination, but be creative, be open, and try different things.
Yeah, I think open is a good word for it. At the facility level, just be open to change, because you know it will be a change when someone comes in saying we want you to do something differently. It might be different, and just to expose the people who are actually going to have to implement those changes to the possibility that, you know what, it's a good thing. It may be a little bit of a pain, but it's okay, because look at the trade-off. We're working on some great content for some great people, and we have jobs because of it. So it might be a little bit more difficult, but just be open to it. It's okay. And it doesn't take long for it to just be the new normal. So for us, the way we are now, which is very different than the way we were 5 years ago in terms of our security, not that we weren't secure 5 years ago, but it's a different level of security. But this is the new normal. There's nothing unusual to it. It doesn't feel unusual to me at all these days.
That's great. Joshua?
All right. Well, that's a very difficult one, you know, single thing. But I think, you know, I think your example was, if you're a YouTuber, you know, and you want to protect your IP,
that's on a very small scale.
I think ultimately be extremely pessimistic and extremely suspicious, and you know, don't assume that whatever you're doing is secure. I think that's a fundamental requirement for changing mindset, changing all of your behavior. If you sit there and you think what you're doing is secure, you're pretty much vulnerable at that point, because
sure,
you're not thinking about what your activity has done, the effect. You know, I think you were talking about, you know, devices connected to the internet. You know, is your network secure? Does somebody know your router password? Does, you know, yada yada yada, right? So I think I would say just be very very pessimistic, you know, skeptical and pessimistic, really.
That's great advice. Never assume that you're properly secure.
Yeah.
That's great. And keep testing, keep trying, keep innovating, keep doing. Okay, and ultimately keep spending, you know? I mean, that's really what it is. I hate to say it. It's not something that is, it requires investments, and sometimes they're considerable. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. Let's give them a big round of applause.